The mitzvah I chose for the coming week, said Yisro, is the mitzvah of Emunah, belief and faith in God. Since that mitzvah is probably the basis of all the mitzvahs, as the Gemara says that originally they concentrated on all 613 mitzvahs, and as the generations got smaller and weaker, and they couldn't concentrate on all the mitzvahs, so David HaMelech came and gave us 11 mitzvahs to concentrate on, even though we have to keep all of them, but to really concentrate on 11, which cover a lot of different areas. And then some subsequent generations made that number smaller until Habakkuk came along and had Nida Malachas. And he said there's one mitzvah that you have to concentrate on, even though you have to keep all the other ones, and that one will lead you to all the others. That's Emunah. Tzadik v'emunah so yichya. Tzadik lives with his faith and belief in God. So first of all, there is an argument between the Rambam and the Baal Halachas Gedolos, known as the Bahag, whether in fact there is a mitzvah to believe in God. Right? Is there a mitzvah? The Bahag says there is no mitzvah to believe in God. That doesn't mean that you don't have to believe in God. What it means is it's not a mitzvah. Why? Because the term can't possibly be used by belief in God. A mitzvah means a command. That presupposes that you believe in a commander. God can come and say, I tell you to keep Shabbos. If I believe in God, then I believe that God can tell me what to do. And God is telling me what to do. But if I don't believe in God, how can someone come along and say, God said you should believe in him? I don't believe in forgiveness. Who said? You can't have a mitzvah if there's no mitzvah. There's no commander, there can't be a command. So all commands presuppose a belief in a commander. So the belief in God is not a mitzvah, it's a foundation. If you accept that foundation, then we can go on and give you mitzvahs. If you don't accept that foundation, there's no place for mitzvahs at all. So therefore the Bahag holds that there can't be a mitzvah of belief, because manasha, if the person already believes, he doesn't need a mitzvah. If he doesn't believe, there can't be a mitzvah, so mitzvah doesn't apply to belief. The Rambam, on the other hand, does count Emunah as a mitzvah. The question is, how? Who's it talking to? Is it talking to people who believe already? Then they don't need a mitzvah. And if it's talking to people who don't believe, then there can't be a mitzvah, like we explained. So, the simplest answer, I think, is the following. There's another argument. What belief is? What does it mean to believe in God? Does it mean to accept what your parents told you and educated you, or if not your parents, your teachers, right, or what you found out on your own, that there is a tradition that we have that there's a God? And I believe in that tradition. Is that the mitzvah? Or is the mitzvah to investigate and bring philosophical proofs to the fact that there's a God, and investigate that tradition, and come through investigation and intellect to a firm belief in God through your own mental processes? There are three opinions regarding this question. The Shulchan HaGibolim brings out an opinion that's shared by many other sources, that the mitzvah is to believe, not blindly, but to believe in tradition. That's the mitzvah, to believe in God, to believe in the tradition that we have that there's a God, and that he created the world, and all the other things we'll see that belief entails. And not to delve into it philosophically yourself to support that belief, because that only weakens the belief. If you start to have to bring proofs, right, then basically you are starting to a premise that, well, let's say that the premise isn't true, let's prove it. But if you accept it blindly, this is my tradition, I don't question it, then that is real belief. That's one opinion. Then there is the other extreme, the Rambam. The Rambam says that the belief in tradition as the source for your belief in God is the starting point. That's where you have to start. But ultimately, real belief is only when you can investigate philosophically and come to a real understanding of what it is you believe in and why you believe it. Why intellectually it's the proper thing to believe. Okay? And even though it's impossible to prove that there's a God, Like you can't, it's not a mathematical equation, 1 + 1 = 2. Because if it would be, there'd be no free choice. You'd have to believe in God. So there has to be a place to deny and to make a mistake. But there is plenty of proof that can be brought for someone who wants to believe that will support and strengthen his belief. So the Rambam holds one is required to make all of that investigation, all of those intellectual, philosophical proofs to strengthen his belief, and that's real belief. The Sefer HaChinuch has a middle ground. He said both are true. The real mitzvah belief is to believe in tradition. But a mitzvah amuchar, a more proper way of fulfilling that mitzvah, is by investigating, making philosophical proofs, and so on. In any case, based on this, the Ifta Rambam in fact holds that the mitzvah of belief is not just to believe in tradition, that the mitzvah is to take it one step further and intellectually prove it, investigate it, then we have an answer to the question we started with. The Baha'i says it's not possible a mitzvah to believe, because if you believe, then there is no mitzvah, there's no need for a mitzvah, and if you don't believe, there can't be a mitzvah. But that's only if belief is accepting tradition. But if belief is going beyond accepting tradition, it's now making all the investigations, then we understand the Rambam. The Rambam says there's a mitzvah to believe in God. What does that mean? After you already believe in tradition, now take it one step further and investigate or whatever. So the mitzvah is the investigation. The initial belief is taken for granted. So the mitzvah is to people who already believe, not the people who don't believe. The Baha'i is right. People who don't believe, there can't be a mitzvah. But someone who believes already has a mitzvah now to carry it further and investigate it and bring proofs to it. Yeah. Because the Rambam says that if you just accept something blindly, even though you say you believe it, right, it's not as real to you as if you know all the proofs and you intellectually convince yourself, right, logically, that this is something that's the fact. Yeah, that's why others hold that there is no mitzvah to do that. The Maaseh HaHalacha, what does he do? Says like this. A person who knows either that without intellectually investigating and bringing proofs, whose belief is on shaky ground, he doesn't accept the tradition that strongly. So he needs this to bolster it. Or, he believes in tradition, but he knows that if he will investigate and bring proofs, it will strengthen his belief, then that is a positive thing for him. Someone who knows that investigating is an open self to doubts, then better he shouldn't investigate. Better if he can't handle it, then better he should believe in tradition, and that's it. Yes?
It all boils down to Ma'aseh B'Lishma.
Okay, that's the next words I have on this paper. I'm beginning to think that maybe I am a puppet. Okay, do you want to continue? In any case, so that therefore explains the Rambam. Okay? And this all boils down to Ma'aseh B'Lishma. Ma'aseh B'Lishma means the following, that Klal Yisrael accepted unconditionally that they would accept what God said, whether they understand it, they don't understand it, whether they can prove it, they can't prove it, whether they intellectually investigated or not. But after they accept it, 100%, there is an idea of understanding as much as you can. Right? And the Me'iri says it even more clearly on another pasuk, this concept. Truth times a das lambeni to the mitzvasecha ha'emanti. If I want to understand, okay, the mitzvahs, because without understanding them, I won't do them. First, you explain it to me. First, I have to investigate. And if I come out with the right answer, right, that it pleases me, then I do it. That is truth 100%. You have to do it because God said to do it. That is the first level of belief. Do it because there's tradition, I believe in God. That's what my parents told me and their parents told them, all the way back to Adam Harishon, who was created by God, there's a God. Now that I believe already, and I'm willing to do the mitzvahs, now there's an extra added dimension of understanding it, of investigating it, but not as a prerequisite for doing it. As an after, that's why there's Ma'aseh and Lishma. There's not just Ma'aseh, we do it blindly. after I accept to do it blindly, and it's not a prerequisite anymore to understand, now I want to understand. Because there is a benefit, many times, to understand, because that strengthens my actions and it strengthens my belief. But if you know that's not the case, you're not capable, you're not on the level, you're not intellectual enough to go delve into this philosophy. Or you know that delving into it will just open a Pandora's box of doubts for you. Then you shouldn't get involved in this. Okay. And there's also a mitzvah, in addition to all the philosophical proofs, there's another aspect of proving your belief, or investigating it, and that is investigating the tradition itself, and see why that tradition is believable. Okay, our religion lends itself, I don't want to go into a great detail in this, we once did it before Pesach, we may do it again before Pesach, but our religion has an edge over all the other religions. There is no other religion in the world. We use the two major religions of Christianity and Islam that have the kind of tradition that we have. Okay, in fact, both of those religions also have our tradition. They just add to it. So they also believe in what we believe. Except they say that it changed or something was added to it or whatever. But I once had a woman come to me. She wanted to convert. She was a Catholic. And I said to her, tell me, why do you want to convert? What are you unhappy about with Catholicism? So she said, there's too many things in Catholicism that I just can't swallow, I can't believe. So I thought she was talking about, like, you know, virgin birth or that a man could be God. So I said to her, could you give me an example of one of the things about Catholicism that you just can't accept? She said, yeah, the splitting of the Red Sea. I said, I hate to tell you this, but it wasn't the Catholics who went through the Red Sea, it was us, the Jews. She says, you guys believe in that too? I said, yeah. I said, and also don't waste your time with the Muslims, because they also believe in it. In any case, so, that's too soon. I will quote Rabbi Wang. He said, all my stories are true, just some of them haven't happened yet. But I take issue with that. All my stories happen, and they're all true. Okay. Well, at least most of them are true. Yeah. Okay, in any case, so what our tradition has in its favor is that it starts with something that was witnessed by a multitude of people, not something that was witnessed by a small group or one individual said he was or he did or whatever. When you start with what someone says he was, or a small group says they saw, so the whole basis of the religion is hearsay. It's what somebody said they saw or they did. Believe them, don't believe them. But our religion doesn't start with Moshe Rabbeinu coming and telling us a bunch of things. It's we saw all the miracles of the Exodus from Egypt. We saw the Red Sea split, all of us, not a few of us. And we all heard God speak at Mount Sinai and give us a Torah. So to falsify something that was claimed to have happened in front of an entire nation is very, very difficult. Because you can't make an entire nation think they saw something they didn't see. It's very, very improbable. You can't make up something and later generations convince them that their ancestors saw something if they never heard about it. So to claim that something happened publicly and for that to be false, it can be falsified, but it's very, very improbable, very difficult. Much easier to falsify something where someone is told that someone else saw something, and you have to be convinced that you believe him. That's possible. But if I were to come here tonight and said, that on the way here, you got to hear what happened to me. I was on the highway, and there was a traffic jam. And all of a sudden, while my car was sitting there on the highway, a flying saucer landed on the hood of my car, and 10 little green men got out and danced around my car, right, singing L'Shem Abed Yerushalayim, ran back into the flying saucer, and took off. And I would say it really seriously, and you'd see that I was really shaken up. So some of you may even believe me. Why should I lie to you? Now, some of you may either think I was hallucinating, or I had a few drinks before I came here, or some of you may even think that I'm telling the truth. It's possible. But if I were to tell you, listen, 15 minutes ago, you over here, don't you remember Flying Saucer landed right over here and 10 green men got out and danced around all of us? Don't you remember seeing that? I don't think there's anybody here that would have a doubt, right, to surely think I'm out of my mind. Because it's hard for me, it'd be impossible for me, to convince you that you saw something you didn't see. Most of you, at least, right, would say I'm out of my mind. It's not true. So, I may be able to convince you that I saw something I didn't see, but it's very improbable, much more difficult for me to convince you that you saw something you didn't see. So, therefore, there's also a mitzvah not only to prove your belief in God with intellectual, philosophical proofs, but to trace back that tradition and see that the tradition is based on a very, very firm ground. Okay. Let's now see some other answers to this question of who is the mitzvah as a munah to. He gave one answer already. Okay, he said the Rambam holds that there's a mitzvah command to believe, and he said that that's problematic, because if it's the people who believe already, then you need a mitzvah, and if it's the people who don't believe, there can't be a mitzvah. So the first answer we gave is the mitzvah is not belief. It's to bolster that belief with proofs. So the Rambam, who holds of that, is very simple. Why he holds there's a mitzvah? The mitzvah starts after you believe. Now, to the believers, go and prove it. Go and investigate. That's one answer. Second answer. There are many levels in belief. Belief is not just, yeah, I believe, you know, a bunch of guys getting in a tent and somebody getting up there and giving a fire and brimstone sermon and everybody saying, I believe, and they're converted overnight, and in 2 seconds they turn from non-believers to believers. That's not what belief is. Right? People can give lip service and say they believe. The question is, do you really believe? And really believe means that that it really is something real to you, right? And you have no doubts about it, and it's something that you give your life for, because you really, really believe it. Right? A person can really believe in God, but if his parnassa is in danger, then, you know, my parnassa is more real to me than God is. And my father, Oliver Shalom, once told me a nice joke that points this idea of how much you really believe. There was an atheist who fell off a cliff. And as he's falling to his death, he says to himself, you know, maybe there is a God. So it can't hurt to try. So he lifts his eyes heavenward, and he says, if there's a God up there, if you're really there, and you save me miraculously, I will be your true servant forever. And all of a sudden, out of the side of the mountain, comes a tree, right, pushes its way out, and the man gets caught on the tree, and it breaks his fall, and he's hanging there between heaven and earth, hanging on the branch. He looks up, and he says, God, thank you, I believe in you, I'm your faithful servant. And he waits, and waits, and he's hanging by the branch, and there's no communication, nothing happens. So he looks up again, he says, God, tell me, what do you want me to do now? And a voice booms out of the heavens, leave go of the branch. The guy thinks for a few minutes, he looks up, he says, anybody else up there? So there's belief and there's belief. Right? So a person's entire life, he can strengthen his belief in God, and that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah, again, is to believers. But the mitzvah doesn't end when you say you believe. There's no line to cross. There's a line between not believing and believing. But once you cross that line, there's an infinite amount of other lines to cross as you grow stronger and stronger in what you really believe. The more you know about what you believe. I mean, ma'amin b'emunah shleima. I believe in God. What does that mean? I have no idea, but whatever it is, I believe in it. No, you have to know what to believe in. What does that mean, you believe in God? Right? What is that? What are the implications? What does that obligate you to? So there are untold levels of how much you believe. So that's the, and the Ibn Ezra says that. Why did God introduce himself as the God who took us out of Egypt, and not the God who created heaven and earth? So because we witnessed the exodus from Egypt. Nobody witnessed the creation of heaven and earth. And the belief in God has to be so strong, says Ibn Ezra, as if you saw it with your own eyes. It's something that belief has to become so, if you were there by the Exodus in Egypt, and you saw the splitting of the Red Sea, you heard God speaking, your belief in God would be almost like a tangible belief. Not just an ethereal, abstract belief. That's how real the belief has to become. You have to integrate that belief so much that it becomes something tangible. You could actually see it. Along these lines, they say that the Kutzke Rebbe once said to his Hasidim, they're in the Sukkah, and he says to them, do you believe that the Ushpizin, the seven Avos, and what's it called, come as guests to the Sukkah? Do you believe that they're here with us? And they all nodded their head yes. He said, well, I don't. So they looked at him like he's out of his mind. He said, I don't believe it. I see them. I know they're here. There's a very big difference between believing something and knowing it, seeing it. Right? I don't believe you're all here. I see you. Right? If I'd be standing outside and somebody told me that you're all inside, then I could believe that you're here. But if I see it with my own eyes, I'm believing. Right? So the belief has to come to such a level where you mamish feel it, where you can see it, where it's real to you. And there's an unlimited, infinite amount of levels that one can go to make it more real and more real and more something that you're willing to sacrifice for. Also, how much you're willing to sacrifice, how much you really believe it. Okay, just to give an example of the difference between something someone really feels, even though they know it, they can feel it more, right, is a reflex action that I think all of you probably can relate to. Right, in America, they used to have these this green paint that somebody must have bought, you know, years before, millions of gallons of it. They used to paint park benches with that ugly green, what's it called, color everywhere. In Miami, in New York, it's the same green color on a park bench. And when they would paint the benches from time to time, they put a sign on the bench that said wet paint. What is the reflex reaction of most people when they see that? Why? Don't you believe signs? You can see the paint is glistening. Why are you all such skeptics? Now the answer is that when you put your finger and you see the paint on your finger, then you really know that it's wet paint. Till then, you just believe it. It's not the same thing. So your emunah, the belief in God, has become so strong, it's as if you touch the paint. Not just that you saw the sign. Okay. So that's another answer. How can there be a mitzvah to believe in God? If you believe already, that's the mitzvah. And if you don't believe, how could there be a mitzvah? This answer also presupposes that you believe. The mitzvah is to believers. If you're a believer, you believe in mitzvah. Because there are two levels of belief. This is similar to what we said before, just a little bit of a further perspective on it. The Chazon Ish says that emunah and bitachon are the same thing. Emunah means faith, belief. Bitachon means having trust. Trust, you trust God. Okay? That's bitachon. So the Chazon Ish says that emunah is the abstract, and bitachon is putting into practice. If you really believe in God, then trust Him. If you believe in Him, then you believe that He created the world, He guides everything, then trust Him that if things happen, that He's the source of it, that it's probably for the good. So, yes, there's a mitzvah to believe, but once you believe, comes the next stage of trusting God. If you believe Him already, then trust Him. So the mitzvah is on the trust. The belief is taken for granted. Because if you don't believe, then you can't have a mitzvah. But once you believe, now the mitzvah comes and says, put that belief into practice. Don't just leave it abstract. Make it have the implications of what belief is that you trust God. And the Shemi Shmuel says an idea like that. That part of the mitzvah belief is to believe that even when things go wrong, that there's reasons for it, and God is behind it. Okay. There's another idea of belief that it leads to. Aside from trusting God, it's also being trustworthy to God. Being a ne'eman. That you are faithful. If you have faith in God, and you believe in God, then you should be faithful to God. If you really believe in Him, then you should be faithful. In fact, what Samson Paul Hurst says that part of the mitzvah belief is lismoch, and lismoch bo l'shchazuto, to trust God and to get strengthened by God, to be faithful to God. Okay. Now there are other another possibility is that the mitzvah is to those who don't believe. How could there be a mitzvah to people who don't believe? If you don't believe, who's commanding you? But the mitzvah is to be objective. The truth is that every human being has within him a belief in God. It's a natural, innate function of the human psyche. As all sociologists will tell you, that there is a common need that man has for a God. And that's why world over, some power, some supreme or greater power than oneself. So it's something that's in the psyche of humankind. Okay, world over. So why other people don't believe in God? Or create many gods that for all practical purposes destroy the whole concept of a God? Because they don't want to believe. It's because they're subjective. Because I don't want to believe in a God who's going to cramp my style, and if I believe that the world was created for a purpose, I have to fit that purpose. But people would rather be Hefker. They'd rather be totally free, what they call free, to do whatever they want. So if there's rhyme and reason and purpose to the world, then I can't do whatever I want. Then I am bound to the plan of the Creator. Right? It's like, I've given this example many times, I'll give it now a little shortly. If you buy a car, you are bound to the design of the designer of that car. You can't do whatever you want with the car. And if you want to destroy it, you can't. But if you want the car to work, you have to put the right grade of gas in the right place, you have to put the oil in the right place, because that's how the car was designed. So even though it's your car, you are responsible to the design of the designer. You didn't design the car. You didn't make it. So if you believe that this is a designer for the world, then you are bound to that design. You can eat when he tells you to eat, and you shouldn't eat when he tells you not to eat, and you should work when he tells you to work, and he can tell you what's good for you, what's not good for you, because that's how he created you. So mitzvah is, in fact, the people who don't believe, but it tells them, don't blind your eyes, don't close your eyes because of your subjectivity and bias to that which you know innately, that if you look around, you see an orderly world, there must be a God who created this world. It's improbable to assume that the world just came by blind chance when there seems to be so much order and intelligence in what the world is. So the mitzvah is for those who don't believe, but the mitzvah is, don't blind your eyes and deafen your ears to that innate belief that everybody has. So those are a few different ways of understanding how there can be a mitzvah to believe in God. Who does it go on? According to the first few ways we said, the mitzvah is for those who believe. It's just the enhancement of the belief that's a mitzvah. And according to the last idea, it's a mitzvah for the people who don't believe. And the mitzvah is, search out your conscience and you'll find that belief innate, natural to a human being. That's one of the reasons the Gemara says, but not that you believe. I have a different explanation of that. But the idea is that, like you said, belief has many, many levels. And if Avraham Avinu exhibited on his level even a small crack, that produced a small crack in belief and that needed to be corrected. Avraham Avinu, when God said that he would inherit Eretz Yisrael, so Avraham said, how do I know? Give me a sign that that's going to happen. That's when God made the beast and Abisarim with him. So on the surface, it seems that Avraham didn't trust God. That he said, you know, I'm not sure if that's going to be. Could you prove it to me? Could you give me a sign? Rashi says he didn't doubt anything. He just wanted to know in what merit the Jewish people would inherit Eretz Yisrael. That was his question. But it appeared that he had doubts. So since Avraham Avinu was the progenitor, he was the foundation of the Jewish people, And if it appeared that he had doubts in trusting God, then that left a blemish in the Jewish people where they would have doubts. To resolve those doubts, we needed the Exodus from Egypt and all the things before to bring home very clearly there's a God in the world. Gemara in the Garden. Okay. Yeah. There's a good reason, right? Yeah, because even when it's because you're not so good, God isn't hurting you, punishing you to get even with you. But when a person does something that's not so good, so it makes him sick, spiritually. When you're sick, you need sometimes to take bitter medicine. Sometimes you need an operation. So all of the, what we call punishments, are really treatments to help take away the bad effects that we cause on ourselves by doing things that weren't right. That's only one possibility. There's a million other possibilities. If I would know all of them, I would have a much better job. But, why? He's a master doctor, and if I do things that make me sick spiritually, I have faith that if God brings things upon me that I need to correct the sickness that I caused on myself, that it's for my good ultimately. Eternally. That's the trust. I trust. The doctor comes and says, I'm going to have to cut you open, cut a little bit of your kishkes out, right? If you don't trust that doctor, right, then you can't feel that the doctor's doing it because he wants to help you. You're feeling maybe the doctor's a sadist and he just wants to, you know, get a little enjoyment of cutting people up. I can't tell you 100%. I can't even tell you 1%. But what I can tell you is the following possibilities. Okay? One thing is that there's an idea that not everybody holds up, but it's pretty well held, of Gilgal. That neshamas don't just come once into this world, they come many times. Therefore, it's possible that a child is born to make up for something of a previous life that has to be settled another time around, and it could be only a few minutes are necessary, or a few years, or whatever, and that child has to go through a process that will collect the neshama that he has, which is left over from a previous life. Okay, that obviously you can't argue with me, because, you know. But I'll tell you another idea. That is the following. It could be that there's no previous life. But God ordains every neshama that comes into this world comes for a different purpose, and it's like a puzzle. Every neshama is a piece in the puzzle. And without every piece, the puzzle is not complete. And only God knows what the puzzle is all about. So he created all the neshamas that were necessary in all the different possibilities, right, that they have to make that puzzle complete. Each part is different, though. Some are bigger, some are smaller. And it's possible that there were neshamas that were supposed to come into this world for 1 second, or to be stillborn, and not to live the chlal in this world, not to have any free choice, just that neshama had to come into this world for a second and it accomplished something. And that was it. And then the neshama goes back where it came from. Other neshamas were supposed to come here for hundreds of years, or for 80 years, or 90 years, or whatever, and accomplish whatever it was supposed to accomplish. So, how do I know that? I know it from something that you all know. I'm sure that you're familiar. It says that David HaMelech was supposed to live how long, originally? His neshama was supposed to come to this world for 1 second. How did he live 70 years? Because Adam HaRishon was supposed to live 1,000 years, and he only lived 930 years. He donated 70 years of his life to David HaMelech, that David should live to live 70 years. But you see from that medrash that originally God programmed David HaMelech's neshama to come into the world for 1 second, to be a stillborn, but to die at birth. And there was a purpose for that. What it is beyond us. But we see that the concept exists. That it's possible that certain neshamas will come into this world to exist only for short amount of time, years, days, months, served their purpose, and then went back to where they were. It's not a punishment. Not every time somebody suffers is a punishment. Right? And every punishment is not a punishment to hurt us. It's all collective measures. But sometimes not a punishment at all. It's because that's what that neshama needed to serve its purpose here. And how long and what kind of life is only God knows. Why he created all those neshamas, why he put them when he did, why he put people in this earth in the time of the Holocaust, and why he put other people in a time of plenty and security. That's because every person needs something different. Okay, let's go on. What is belief? I believe, what are you supposed to believe in? So amongst the things that a Jew has to believe about God, okay, I'm not talking about other things, is that God exists. And that nothing in creation could exist if God doesn't exist. In other words, God is the only true existence. Everything else exists because God wants it to exist. And if God wouldn't want it to exist, then it wouldn't exist. It has no intrinsic existence. God is intrinsic existence. That's Yudke Vatke. That God exists without the need of anything else, and nothing else, everything depends on his existence, and his existence depends on nothing. And that there is nothing else besides him. God is one, there is no other God, and not only that, there is no other existence besides God, because everything exists because of God. And that God didn't only bring the world into existence, that he constantly guides and directs the world. He's involved in the world. There were people who believed in God, but believed that God severed his attachment to the world after he created it. So he got enjoyment in creating the world, and he went to something else. Went to the movies. I don't know what he did after he created the world. But he's not involved in the world. That, I think, is Nietzsche's philosophy of God is dead. Meaning God is irrelevant, right? So once that somebody wrote graffiti in the subway in New York, God is dead, signed Nietzsche. And then somebody underneath it wrote, Nietzsche is dead, signed God. The idea, and the Meshech Chochma says that in itself is included in the word Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Aside from a statement of existence, that I'm the one who took you out of Egypt, meaning I'm involved in the world. I haven't disconnected myself from the world. The Maharal says an interesting thing. He says that the word Amen, which is Emuna, right, has a hint to the things that you have to believe. Aleph is Rishon, the God is first, God is the creator. Mem is God is the Melech, he's the king. He guides and is involved in the world, and you have to listen to his directives. And the Nun is Mitzri, God is eternal. So the Aleph, Mem, Nun represent the belief in God as a creator, God as a king, and God as transcending time being eternal. And not only that, it's interesting, Rav Shimon Shamsher Bar Hur says that Muna has a connection to the word Uman, artisan. So an artisan is someone who fashions something. We have belief that God is the artisan who fashioned the world. So Emunah has to do with believing that God is the artisan who fashioned the world.
That's not good, because
God made the world yesterday. Sure, that's right. Not just he fashioned it, but he brought it and made it able to exist. Okay, we'll amend that. You're right. The Shem Yishmur says that the idea of Emunah is gathering all your powers within you together, just like all the powers in the world, and negating them and subjugating to God. Belief in God as the ultimate supreme power and source of everything means that all the other powers in the world emanate from him. So we're a little world. That means all our powers that we are emanate from him too. So I have to subjugate myself to God just as much as I subjugate the world to God. And the Sfatemah says that that's the idea of Hoya Hoveyi, a God's name, Yudke Vavke, explained a few weeks ago, is was, is, and always will be. The was is that he's the creator. The is that he guides the world. And the always will be is Vayom Aleh Yashem Echad Ishmael Echad. God is eternal, and one day will be one, and everything will unite underneath Him. And he says also that the three tefillos of Shabbos, Friday night, Shabbos morning, and Shabbos afternoon represent this. Friday night is Shabbos Parashas, creation. Shabbos morning is Matan Torah, giving of the Torah. It's also on Shabbos. And that is what's called the fact that God guides, controls, rules the world. And Shabbos of Lost Lotto, the Shabbos of the future, is represented by Minchatan. And that's when Atta Echad, the Shimcha Echad, when God would be completely one. Yes? Right. Okay, that's after Emunah. After I believe in God, I have to fear Him, I have to love Him, to serve Him. Those are all other mitzvahs and other parshios, which maybe we'll get to someday. But it comes after Emunah. First you have to believe. You can't love a God you don't believe in. Okay, the next, how do you come to belief? So the Rambam says there are two ways of a person strengthening or enhancing his belief in God. One is through the Torah. By learning Torah, by observing the mitzvahs of the Torah, you connect yourself to God. And again, you have to believe to begin with before you can do all of that. But that helps to cement that belief and enhance it. Another way is by studying nature. The more you study nature, the more you'll see there's a God. Almost for somebody who really sees the wonders of nature, right? The greater the scientist is, the more it's almost impossible for him to be an atheist. Because he knows that there's so many things that can't be explained, you know, just like this, that it could be random chance. Can't be. Yes. So the more that a person delves into nature, the closer also he gets to God and connects himself and enhances his belief. Other things are Shviras HaYetzer, breaking your evil inclination. As we said, belief is impeded by a person not wanting to believe, by blinding his eyes from what is obvious that there's a God, because he doesn't want to be subjugated to a God. So if you break your Yetzer Hara, right, you diminish it, you have more of a chance of believing. Also, if you involve yourself in holy things, you become more sensitive to holiness, and therefore you have a greater feeling of God. Also, the more you trust God, the more that you exercise that trust, the closer you get to God. And lastly, Dveikus. Dveikus means cleaving to God, feeling that closeness, that God is Taka, always there, and you feel Him close to you. And that's why by Avraham Avinu it says, Vayamin Vashem, Vayachsheveha Lo Ritzvaka. That Avraham Avinu believed in God, and Rashi says, and God considered it a tremendous act of kindness. So the Ramban says, what did God expect? God told Avraham Avinu, I promise you you're going to have children. And Avraham believed Him. God said, wow, that's really something, you believe me. So Ramban says, what's going on? What did God expect? So Avraham should say, you're pulling my leg, I don't believe a word of it. Of course he believed Him. God told him something, he believed it. So why does he say God considered it such a great thing? The Ramban says, that's not what it means. It means just the opposite. Avraham believed in God, and Avraham considered it a chesed, a tzedakah, a kindness that God was doing, not something he deserved. That's what the sentence means. Not that God considered it a kindness from Avraham that he believed. But what we've said until now, we can understand Rashi. Belief is not just either you believe or you don't believe. That's all where it starts. Once you make the decision to believe, there is an infinite ladder of how much you really believe, how real it is to you, how much you're willing to sacrifice for it. The level that Avraham believed God, that he would have children, wasn't just that he said he believed it. He believed it to the point where it was like it happened already. That's something very good. God considered that a tremendous level. Right? There's a story, a Chassidish story, that a couple come to what's called to the Rebbe, and they tell him that they've married many years and have children. They want a bracha for children. The Rebbe gives them a bracha. They go out confident they have children. They go out right away and they buy a baby carriage. And 9 months later, they have something to put in it. The rabbi of the Rebbe comes to him and he says, you know, I've been childless for years. I've been asking you for a bracha, and you've given me brachas many times and never worked. How come this couple comes to you once, they get a bracha, and it works right away? So the Rebbe turned to him and said, do you ever buy a baby carriage? Yeah, you got the bracha, you believe. How much did you believe? Right? There's all different levels of belief. They believed, right, that from my bracha, the Rebbeinu Shem, so they got it. Yeah. It's both. If we ever speak about Yirat Shamayim as another mitzvah, and probably in Parshas Ekev, where it appears, so we will explain that there are levels of fear. There's the simplest level of fear where I'm afraid that God will punish me if I don't do what he wants. There's a little bit higher level, I'm afraid I won't get what I could get, I won't benefit what I could get if I won't do what God wants me. That's not crazy to hit me with a lightning bolt. But I really feel that I will be missing something if I don't do what God wants for me, because that's the best thing for me. So it's also fear. Then there's a higher level where it's not fear at all. I'm not concerned about myself, what will happen to me. But I have such awe and reverence, that's another good word, reverence for God, that I want to do what he wants because it's the right thing to do, because God is so great and I stand in awe of him, so I want to do what he wants me to do because that's obviously the right thing to do. That's the highest level.
Then you have to do both,
actually. Right. There's an element of fear, but it grows into an element of awe and reverence. And lastly, the Nefesh HaChaim says that if a person would really believe, I mean to the nth degree, that God alone is the only real existence, and nothing in this world exists without his wanting to exist, and therefore there's nothing in the world that can harm a person, right, if God doesn't want it to happen. And if I really, really believe that, and have total, this is Nefesh HaChaim, total trust in God, then nothing bad can happen to a person. So he says. Now again, people could say they believe like that. The question is it true or it's not true? And there's another maisa with just how much you really believe it. Somebody once came to Rabbi Sol Salanter, I think, and he said that he believes 100% that all he has to do is make a little bit of an effort, and God is the one who provides parnasa, and God can do anything. So he went out and he bought a lottery ticket for $100, and he is sure, right, that he has total faith in God that he did his part, now God's going to do his part, he's going to win the $10 million jackpot from the $100. So, and if you really believe that, right, then it'll happen. Then that's the way God will give you what you want, or what you need, whatever. So Rabbi Sol Salanter said to him, wow, if that ticket's going to win, you know, I'm willing to give you $95 or maybe even $200 for the ticket. Yeah. Guy goes, okay. So he said, forget it, you're not going to win. Right? If you would really have believed that you're going to win $10 million, why would you sell it to me for $200? Right? Must be that you still have some doubts, right? You might as well get the $200 in your hand, right? Then it's not going to work. So they say, though, that the Brisker of... Huh? Yeah, you still have to buy the ticket, that's for sure.
But you shouldn't buy two.
Lechora not. Right? God can make you win with one, too. Right? The in any case, they say that the Brisker Rav... What? Right. Unless it didn't work. You should wait a while. The Brisker Rav, they say, used this Nefesh HaChaim throughout World War II. And there were countless situations where his children unmade, that things happened that were beyond belief. And he went with that belief that no one can harm me, his entire survival of the period of the Holocaust was he attributes to this belief in this Nefesh HaChaim's rule that nothing can harm you if you really have that faith in the Rebbeinu Shlom. And he exercised that faith, he made his children exercise that faith, and things happened that that time after time, miraculous things that appeared to be things that were terrible, that, you know, he's headed to destruction, ended up being things that were beneficial to him in the end in order to save his life. So that is Emunah. We don't have that much time left. Had we had the time, I would have told you, but it's a long thing, about the mitzvah of eating on Shabbos, three meals, and the mitzvah of Lecha Mishnah. But we don't have time for that. So let's think of something from next week's Sedra that I can give you to say at the Shabbos table. The Parsha next, this coming week's Sedra, is Yisro. It happens to contain in it the giving of the Torah, which is the most important event that ever happened, surely that ever happened in the history of the Jewish people. Now, wouldn't you think that the rabbis, when they divided up the Torah into Sedras, they wouldn't have, like, made one Sedra just the giving of the Torah, like, not share it with Yisro, who happened to come and give his son-in-law advice, emotion, okay? So, what do you tell me? Well, Yisro, that's when Yisro came, and when they divided up the Sedras, so they divided this and made half of it with Yisro and half of it with the giving of the Torah. But if Yisro came before the Torah was given, and that's the chronological order, then put it in the end of the Shalah. And start Yisro with Bachodesh HaShlishi, when they came to the desert of Sinai in the third month, and the whole process of getting the Torah, and there's enough psukim for seven aliyahs. No problem. So, why did they have to add that in the beginning? And surely, according to the other opinion, who says that Yisro didn't even come before the Torah was given. He didn't come till after the Torah was given. And it's written out of order. Why in the world should the Torah have prefaced this whole thing with Yisro to the giving of the Torah if it didn't even happen then? What was the need for it? I want to say the following. The Medrash says on the passage by Yishma Yisro, Yisro heard. So the Medrash asks, was he Yisro Levadsham? Yisro was the only one who heard? The whole world heard about the exit from Egypt. Surely about the splitting of the Red Sea, it says in the song we said last week. That the all the nations heard what happened. Shom Olamim Yugazim. Chiloch HaZoshe Koloshes. Rachav said, we heard that God dried up the Red Sea for you. So why does it say that Yisro heard? So the Zohar says very simply, the whole world heard, but they didn't listen. Yisro listened. Sometimes you hear something, but it's not me. It doesn't mean me. It's the person who listens makes a difference. A lot of people have seen erosion. But when Rabbi Akiva saw erosion, it made him become Rabbi Akiva. He said, if water, which is so soft, can erode stone, which is so hard, then Torah, which is so hard, can make an impression on my heart. And he went and became a Talmud Chacham. He went to learn Torah, and he became Rabbi Akiva. So how many people saw erosion, studied erosion, never became Rabbi Akiva? Because they saw, they heard, but they didn't listen. So Yisro listened. That's the reason why this is before Matan Torah. Matan Torah is God talking to man. But God talking to man is useless if man doesn't know how to listen. So first you have to know how to listen. So the Torah put Yisro, who heard what everybody else heard, but he's the one who listened. Now, if you learn from Yisro how to listen, now the Torah is significant. Now, receiving the Torah, God speaking is significant, because now you'll know how to listen. But if you don't know how to listen, then God can talk himself blue in the face, and it'll make absolutely no impression. Yeah? That what? That what? Right. Yes. Yes. What it says is, the one who said this was Avram ben Avram, the Ger Tzedek in the time of the Vilna Gaon. He said that when God offered the Torah to the nations of the world and they rejected it, there were individuals who wanted it, but they were outvoted. And when God offered the Torah to the Jewish people, there were Jews who didn't want it, but they were outvoted. Said the Goyim who wanted the Torah but were outvoted, eventually their descendants become Geirei Tzedek. And the Jews who didn't want the Torah, eventually their descendants become Mishumantim.